Today on The Travel Guys.
In the travel news, Booking.com points to human support as its differentiator. But when I try to contact their PR department with an invitation to come on the air and talk about that human support, all I get is crickets. Maybe not so supportive after all. And we tell you the worst traffic cities in our country. Those stories and more next in the travel news.
On our Smarter Traveler segment at 11:22, we have some tips for beating the high prices at the pump.
At 11:35, one of our favorite bloggers, Joe Brancatelli, joins us to discuss United Airlines' new stronger connection with Citibank credit cards. Joe also explains his strategy when it comes to credit cards and airlines.
In our odds and ends finish at 11:50, we have our favorites off a list of essential things you need to do before you head out on vacation.
That's the lineup. Here to help travelers figure it all out, we are Mark and Tom, the Travel Guys.
On the road again. I've been everywhere, man. Get your kicks on 66.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Travel and Entertainment Guys with Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for joining us. I'm high above my house in my little home studio. And Mark, we have to, what do we always say? Being totally transparent, we are pre-recorded as Mark, as we speak, is out on Route 66. A great picture you sent me earlier today.
Thank you, sir. That was taken from the top of the St. Louis Arch, which is not exactly the biggest Route 66 icon, but still was fun to visit. I hadn't been up to the top of the arch for 20 years, and a lot of us agreed that the building of that arch was probably one of the 10 or so most significant events of that type in our lifetimes. I mean, remembering when that opened in the 60s, and, you know, we were all little kids then. And getting into the arch in St. Louis is kind of an interesting, you spend 10 minutes at the top of the arch, and between all the time of getting in lines and getting in the little cars that take you up to the top and bring you back down and stuff like that, it's about an hour and a half, 2 hour process. There's also a movie about the building of the arch. But if you come to St. Louis, don't let the fact that the arch has been there for a while keep you from going, because it really is one of the coolest things in the country. Make sure, however, we were there today, and of course, we have a group, and we've been coming for a long time, so we have reservations and tickets arranged in advance. But when we got there about 2:30 in the afternoon, there were signs all over that said, no more tickets for today. So if you go to the arch in St. Louis, the Gateway Arch National Park, make sure that you make advance reservations, get your tickets ahead of time, because they frequently sell out, and sometimes as early as 12 o'clock. So it's not the kind of place to go and just assume that you're going to be able to get in, because it might be kind of disappointing. And you do get to spend 10 minutes or so up at the top of the arch, and learning how it's built and everything like that is was really kind of cool. One other thing I want to mention here at the top of the program, if you get to Springfield, Illinois, the best presidential library in the country is in Springfield, Illinois. Now you're saying, wait a minute, which president would that have been? You got to go back a little ways. Abraham Lincoln. This library, presidential library of his in Springfield, where he served and in the legislature there, is just amazing. I mean, they have some features, some animated features and things that you can watch and be a part of that are really, really cool. So if you're a presidential library person, don't leave Springfield, Illinois off your list, because that's the Lincoln Library. And in my opinion, I've been to about 8 or 9 of them now. It's the best one.
Awesome. Well, good news. Thank you. All right. We are Mark and Tom, the Travel and Entertainment Guys. And at the top of every Travel Guys radio program, we bring you up to date on the travel news. Today's edition, once again, here's Mark Hoffman.
Timing your fill-ups. Chris Elliott tells us that according to Gas Buddy's 2026 analysis, Sunday is most consistently the best affordable day to buy gas in most United States. If you buy on Wednesday or Thursday, you're almost guaranteed to pay a premium over the weekly average. And if you buy on Sunday, you are almost guaranteed to save yourself between 5 and 10 cents a gallon over the average price other days of the week. So if you're out on the road and you're driving home and it's Sunday afternoon and you look at the needle and it's just about empty, you might save a couple bucks by buying your gas on Sundays. I mentioned in the headlines on booking.com, this is comes from the website Hotel Dive. It's a couple weeks old now. It says booking.com points to human support as its differentiator. And the article talks about the fact that booking.com knows travel can be stressful. It's one of the most stressful things that you do. Flights get canceled. Hotels get overbooked. I'm not sure what hotel they're booking in. Plans change. That's where booking.com's customer service becomes a key part of the equation. And it says the travel platform is heavily investing in AI and customer service, but human connection still matters, the spokesperson said. So I thought, well, this is a great thing. An online travel agency, the biggest one, booking.com, is bragging about the fact that they have customer service support to help you. Now, it may be AI customer service support, but maybe it's really good AI customer service support. So I wrote the folks at booking.com through their website, through their press office, and patiently waited a week for an answer. And I wrote them again. And, you know, the travel guys probably not, you know, we're not ABC News or anything like that.
Yeah.
And I wrote them again, still no answer. And so I called them on the phone. And after about, an hour and 25 minutes of dodging from one, you know, push this button, push that button, push this button, finally got a recording and left the guy a recording. And he didn't even call me back. He sent me an email back and said, we'll be in touch with you as our schedule allows.
Wow.
So to those of you that book booking.com and the fact that they brag that their human support is what makes a difference with booking.com, mm-hmm. then in the next sentence, it tells you that it's using AI to route customers to the best channel on first contact, and it's using AI in customer service, and it doesn't have time to return phone calls from media representatives. All I'm just going to say to you is you draw your own conclusions from all of that. But if you think that booking.com is going to fall all over themselves to help you when something goes wrong online, I'm going to suggest to you that that may not be the case. Good luck to you with that. Traffic
wow.
is up. Yeah, I was just surprised. Traffic is up all over. And I was persistent, Tom. You know, I
you were. I can't believe all that you went through to see if you could get a live person and help dispel what we've been talking about for 10 plus years, that if you use any online booking service for anything, beware that if you run into a problem, you're out of luck. You're not going to be able to get anybody to help you. Well, you know what? I think as it stands right now, I'm still going with that.
My suggestion to folks when they travel independently is use those websites as that's the tornado warning siren that's going off here, so hang on a second.
Oh, I was wondering what that was. I thought somebody stepped on the cat.
Wait a minute. Yes, a firearm. It talk about radio in real time. Fire alarm here at the hotel. Turns out that it's not anything to be concerned about, so we can carry on. The travel guys on the road.
Well, all right. Well, we'll wait and see what happens next. Stay tuned, folks.
Exactly. AAA is telling us what the worst traffic cities are in the country. Chicago has officially overtaken New York as the most congested city in the country. Drivers losing 112 hours a year to gridlock. So let's see, divide that by 8. So that's 10, 15, yeah, it's about 15 days a year to gridlock, 24-hour days. That's a lot of time. Mexico City is next. New York is third. Philadelphia, Los Angeles, Boston, Miami, Atlanta, Houston, and Washington, D.C. I don't see any Canadian cities there. But anyways, those are the worst traffic cities. And I was in Chicago earlier this week, and I can attest to the fact that the traffic in Chicago is absolutely atrocious. I mean, on a good day, it's atrocious. Let's see here. What else have we got for you? Passport renewal online. We talked about this a little bit in a program a couple of months ago, but the Washington Post had a great article this week, and I would love to share it with you, but unfortunately, it's a subscription-only thing. You may be able to find it online, but if you go to Travel Guys Radio, you can find a link to renew your passport there online. This Washington Post reporter was talking about the fact that it took them 6 minutes to fill out the renewal form online. This is something that is fairly new. It's just come about in the last few years, but already more than 40% of passports are being renewed online, which means that, you know, no more mailing in a check, and system seems to be working pretty well for people. There are some rules that you cannot renew online. You can't have already had a, you must have had a passport with a 10-year validity to it. You have to be applying for a regular passport, not something special. You can't request a name to a change or a correction to some of your pertinent information. But anyway, for many people, at least 40% of us are having success renewing passports online. So it's time to renew your passport. That would be my suggestion. You can save yourself a tremendous amount of time and effort and maybe a few dollars along the way also.
Now,
Southwest Airlines.
Let me just jump in real quick. For those that don't have a passport, none of this applies. It's still the old-fashioned way, is it not?
It is, correct. That's an important differentiation, is that if you haven't had it, this is about for renewing passports. So if you already have a passport, you've had at least one of the 10-year passports in your possession, one that's been valid for 10 years. And like I said, there are a few other things that you that qualifications here, but it's entirely possible 4 out of 10 people are renewing their passports online. And if you've ever been to a passport office, it's not really a lot of fun. So and all of us are busy, and it's going to take a couple, 3 hours of your life you can't have back. So this is a good deal. If you could pull it off, again, there's a link to renew your passport at travelguysradio.com.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure, sir. Southwest Airlines has said that they are going to start pushing ahead with their plans to introduce airline lounges in some of the cities that they already serve. Of course, in Sacramento, there is a lounge in an airline lounge, a small one, American Express Escape Lounge in the Southwest Terminal. So don't know if they haven't revealed yet whether or not they're planning on trying to string along on other lounges and let their customers in or open their own lounges. Of course, this is something that is one of these things we talk about, airlines being very different in the way that they make money these days. And one of the ways that they make money is that they have these lounges and they get you to spend $500 on a credit card. You come into the lounge 3 times during the year and eat $50 worth of food and drink $25 worth of booze, and they've made a $425 profit, so they're okay with that. Doesn't have anything to do with flying. It's just because you were in the airport, you had some time, and you wanted a quiet place to be able to go. I might suggest that those lounges are not always the most quiet place. Our road reporter, Clayton Whitehead, he swears by those lounges, and I am just exactly the opposite. I have a credit card that will let me get into them, but it's very rare that I go into one because the food is kind of mediocre, and I usually don't have, you know, if you've got an hour connection, then I don't get it. Anyways, I wish everybody who has airport lounge access, I wish you the best. And I hope that they're accepting people and letting them in when you get there and want to hide out for a little while. Listen, this is kind of a cool thing. If you like train travel, the California Zephyr, Amtrak's California Zephyr, which runs between Chicago and San Francisco, and of course stops in Sacramento every day, has put on some really cool excursions, private excursions with some private rail cars. So if you're somebody who has a few dollars to spend on travel and you're looking for something really special, this is an article from Travel and Leisure about luxury rail cars on the California Zephyr. You can rent an entire car if you want to. Doesn't say what it costs. Oh, yes, it does say what it costs. Six people from Denver to Emeryville or vice versa for six people, $37,000. So bring your wallet.
Wow.
Yeah. you have a sleeper car with like five luxurious bedrooms in it and a glass dome and a dining area and a full bar and three gourmet meals prepared by a chef on board. So this is kind of, this is the first time that Amtrak has done anything like this. And so luxury train trips on the California Zephyr, which is a great way. In my opinion, the Zephyr is the best train ride in the country. It takes you through the Sierra Nevadas and through the Rockies. And that's just about as scenic and as awesome as it gets. And that is your travel news for today.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, you probably missed it here. We had the alarm at your hotel there. Just about 3 minutes ago, there was a huge bang here at my house, and I could hear my wife running around. We had this is our second door kicker, if you know what I mean. What's happening is young kids will go around the neighborhood, and they'll go up to your door and turn around backwards and boot it a couple of times really hard with the bottom of their foot and then run. Good thing I was right in the middle of this radio show, or I would have gone down there and nabbed them. So anyway, this show has everything.
In a 15-minute period here, we've had a fire warning and nearly a break-in. But other than that, your travel news for today.
Yes, sir. And we are the Travel Guys coming up, the Smarter Traveler segment. Be here for it next here on the Travel Guys. All right, Mark, let's charge on into the Smarter Traveler segment here.
Well, and we talked a little bit in the travel news about Chris Elliott saying that if you want to get the lowest gas price, and obviously this is not going to work everywhere, this is just based on national averages, that Sunday is the best day to fill up, and that the worst day to fill up is Wednesday or Thursday. You know, when you're buying an airline ticket, used to be that Tuesday, Wednesday, Saturday were the best days to travel. Tuesday and Wednesday because business people were already where they needed to go in the middle of the week, and Saturdays because nobody was flying for business on that day. They got home on Friday and they were leaving on Sunday. So Saturday, you eliminated a whole segment of travelers. So the same sort of theory here, I think, applies with the gas pump thing,
yeah,
is that Sunday is kind of everybody's day of rest. So if there's an increase coming at the pump, why, it may wait until the boss gets in on and the load of gas comes in on Monday morning. So,
okay. I don't really understand why any particular day would be better than another. It seems like gas goes up kind of according to the price of oil, and it takes a while for it to have an impact. But if there is any relevance to when people spend time buying gas, it's certainly more of it during the middle of the week and certainly less of it on a Sunday.
Well, and the other thing, talk about gas prices should be falling. I mean, oil dropped, $10 almost. The futures prices dropped about 12% on Friday. So it's entirely possible that a built-in discount on, just like the prices were going up at record paces, that's going to turn around a little bit. Of course, the one thing that always seems to plague those of us travelers, whether it's gas prices or, the airlines are raising their baggage fees, $5, $10 across the board in order to help cover the increased cost of fuel. If jet fuel goes back to exactly what it sold for 2.5 months ago, do you think there's any chance that those baggage fees will go away?
No way.
Not even a chance.
Yeah, they're on
Not
there.
Even.
They're on there for good.
Yeah, I'm afraid that they absolutely are. Hey, listen, I'm talking a little bit more for a minute here about gas prices and where you can. And here I am out traveling a major highway, which Route 66, as it cuts through Illinois on the way to St. Louis, which is the route we've covered the last few days. Parts of it kind of mirror the I-55 interstate. And people say, well, gee, you know, that's they built Route 66 in the best spot. That's what it tells you, is that the interstate, it took five interstates to replace Route 66. So in some cases, you are along the interstate. The reason I bring that up is because a lot of times gas prices on major highways are higher. So if you just get off and drive into a little town and find the local service station there, sometimes you can find a serious discount off of the highway prices. So 2 or 3 miles into town will almost always get you a better deal, especially in, if you're in a fairly good sized city, like we stayed last night in Springfield, Illinois. So there are 5 or 6 off ramps off the interstate there where you could get gasoline. But my guess is that people in town are paying less for gasoline because they're going to places that are not off of those that are not attached to a major highway and therefore don't offer the convenience that, but because they're designed for local customers. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. And I have to ask, I know you have a bus, you got a bus driver. He makes the decisions for you're going to stop and get gas. Have you noticed any dramatic price differences in one part of your Route 66 from Chicago to Oklahoma that the prices were dramatically different?
No, we have just passed through Illinois, and Illinois has gas prices that they are not as high as they are in California, but Illinois has some pretty high gas prices. So to start with, we're just crossing into Missouri, and we're going to be doing some Missouri travel over the next couple of days. Gas prices in Missouri are some of the lowest in the country, so there are less taxes and things like that, and they don't put, you know, it doesn't cost them money to put additives into the fuel to try to make the air cleaner because they don't bother with that. So it's all a lifestyle sort of thing. But no, haven't noticed yet. Gas prices are expensive here in Illinois, but really and truly, gas went up, what, about $1.20 over a month and a half, 2 month period. And now we've seen oil drop. 2/3 of that increase now is gone. I don't know what's going to happen Monday morning, but for right now, at least, 2/3 of that increase should be rolling back in the next couple, 3 weeks. I don't expect that to happen, but I'm just saying, if you're being fair about it, then it seems to me like if that's what caused the price to go up, that should, when that price drops, the price should come down. Are there any of those online betting services where you could bet on the possibility of that happening?
That there probably are. There probably are.
Hey, listen, I also picked up a couple things here I wanted to share with you real quickly on, we talked about cars being stolen from airport parking lots and the like. One travel tip that I saw that I really thought was, and I watched this the other day as somebody got into an overhead mid-flight, and I immediately thought of this. When you put your carry-on up in the overhead, especially on long-distance flights, when people tend to doze off, you know, you're there and your bag's up overhead, or, you know, even could be a row or two ahead or behind you, and you're having a nice nap, don't put your carry-on with the zippers facing out.
Oh.
Okay?
Great idea.
You take your carry-on. Yeah, it's a backpack, right? So you put it in the opposite direction. So the bottom of the backpack is what's facing out. So when somebody gets up to get into their own bag, hypothetically, they don't have opportunity, doesn't present itself that your backpack's right there. And all they got to do is, you know, move one zipper a little bit and put their hand in and start feeling around for what might be in there. Also, don't put cash or valuables in easily accessible places that you put into the overhead. So if you're putting cash, most people carry some cash when they're traveling. If you're carrying a couple $100s or something like that, you don't want it to be where it's easily accessible to people. Put it in a zippered pocket inside of your backpack or your briefcase or whatever it is that you use to carry cash and other valuable things in, is make sure that, and never put cash in the tray at TSA. Always put it in, at least in a jacket pocket or something else before you pass through. But I thought the idea of the zippers not facing out was something I had really never thought about before. But it really makes 100% sense, does it not?
Absolutely, absolutely. Great tip from Mark the Travel Guy.
Going places with that sports leisure flair, a world of adventure, and we take you there.
Adventure. How about a 6-day trip down the Oregon coast? Take a 1-hour flight to Portland, get on a luxury motor coach with 20 other folks, and come down the Oregon coast. Spend a couple of nights in Newport, a couple of nights in Coos Bay, get to see the Redwoods in Northern California, ride on a jet boat on the Rogue River, take a cruise on Newport Harbor. It's a great trip, and the Oregon coast, unlike the Cape Cod coast, is a lot cheaper. The West Coast is cheaper than the East Coast, folks. And it's a beautiful, beautiful place. You can get more information on our Oregon Coast trip, which departs in mid-June, at sportsleisure.com. And let me mention one other trip here before I go. We're going to Japan in November. To Japan. It's our second visit to Japan. Again, you can find more information on a trip, a group trip to Japan at sportsleisure.com.
Hey there, it's Mark Hoffman and Tom Romano, the Travel and Entertainment Guys, brought to you by Sports Leisure Vacations. Thanks for coming along. You'll find a link to our special guest today at TravelGuysRadio.com. Once again, Joe Brancatelli with his website, Joe Sent Me, and it covers everything from business travel to fun travel to some of the stuff to make you a smarter traveler. Mark, what are we going to talk to Joe about today?
Well, in his slightly irreverent way, Joe has penned a column called The Travel Industry House of Cards. And, of course, that's in reference to the fact that, as we've referred to many times on this program, that the airlines and the credit card industry are not just sleeping together. They've got a full-blown relationship. And increasingly, if you don't have the right credit cards, you can find yourself not earning the type of points, miles, bonuses that you were hoping for. Joe has met this issue pretty head on. So, Joe, first, welcome back to the Travel Guys.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mark. It's always a pleasure to be here.
It's nice to speak with you. Joe, where do you come to us from? I know that you're on the East Coast near New York. Are you in Jersey? Or
We are in what I call the vast worldwide Joe Sent Me headquarters, is literally looking across the Hudson River at West Point. So anybody who wants to
come
and harass me, find West Point on a map, then come across the river. It's a blessed place, believe me. We not only see the river, we see the Amtrak trains going by.
Yeah, no, that's a beautiful spot on the Hudson up there. That's really awesome. All right, Joe, let's talk about the airlines and the credit cards. And United recently has walked down the aisle with Chase Bank, which is going to cause some problems for other folks. I'll let you explain.
Well, what United has done, and I expect other carriers to do the same, although they've been all marching down that same aisle in recent years, is United says, if you want to be loyal to us, you also have to be loyal to Chase, in that if you want our best service as United Airlines, our best breaks, our best airfares, our best status, you also have to have a Chase card. This is probably the final frontier because there's not much else you airlines and banks can do together other than the banks outright owning the airlines. It's a kind of mixing that a lot of us find uncomfortable or would have found uncomfortable if we hadn't given up on the airlines years ago.
Now, when you say given up on the airlines, obviously you still fly. What credit card do you use when you fly?
Well, before we get into that, let me explain what I mean by giving up on the airlines. Once upon a time, which was at the dawn of deregulation in the early 1980s, the airlines came up with this idea to reward you for your loyalty. In years past, really frequent flyers used to get a plaque or a letter. But then some smart guy said, "Then why don't we give them some of our capacity we don't sell anyway as a free ticket?" And people like that. People like getting free travel in exchange for already doing what they were going to do. And so many people liked it, they had to create levels, elite levels, to differentiate between the once or twice a year traveler and the person who was on the road every other week or so, or even every week. So you became intensely loyal to the airline you flew because you got the best perks, the best fares, the best freebies, maybe access to their clubs, all kinds of things. Then when a fellow named Steve Grossfeld, who I quote in the column that I wrote about, came up with this idea to link up with a bank to issue a credit card in the name of an airline, the game began to change. It became, well, the real way to hit for wins in the frequent flyer programs was to get what we call the acquisition bonus. A bank says, here's 50,000 or 100,000 points if you take our card. And the shift over the last 10 years has been so dramatic, Mark, I explain it fairly simply. Airline profits, such as there were before these fuel issues, airline profits essentially all come from banks now. Airlines no longer make money flying passengers. Their profits come from the money banks pay them to buy points. No matter how much you fly, you can never be the airline's best customer because United's best customer is Chase.
Wow, Tom, where have we heard that before?
Too often, too many places. Let me ask you this, Joe. Points versus cash back. A lot of cards, you know, you can earn a lot of points. Points devaluate anytime the airlines feels like devaluating them. And then there is all the cash back, like Mark was talking about earlier, that that you get for using a card. What is the better way to go?
There is no perfect answer, Tom. It's become the eternal question. We've written several stories. My best friend in the world, who I've drawn into the travel world, wrote a column a couple of years ago explaining exactly why he gave up on miles. Now, he's not a very patient man, and as you know, you need patience to deal with the airlines. But he laid out a very logical case for why it was better for him to do cashback than play the points game. And for many people where, you know, 2% is the baseline now, you can pretty much get 2% cash back on virtually anything. For a lot of people, it makes sense to take the cash back instead of accruing points, which can, of course, devalue, as you say. What I often say is have the best of both worlds. If you don't fly every week, you know, take a cash back card, get your cash back, put it in a separate account that you mark as your travel account, and then use the money you get as cash back to buy whatever travel you want. You then have the best of both worlds. Free travel, but you've cut the airlines or hotels directly out of the loop of earning the value.
Joe Brancatelli is our guest today. Joe has a blog called Joe Sent Me, joesentme.com. You can take a shot at it. Joe has some really good information presented occasionally in a slightly irreverent way. And we're talking today about credit cards and airlines and the connections between them. Joe, all is not lost, though. I mean, we're talking about here now, the airline is saying, all right, if you don't get our card, we're not going to give you as many points, as many miles, et cetera. You'll have to work harder. You'll have to fly more and do more business with us in order to be able to get those awards that you're looking for. But as you point out in this article, and you give an example of it, you don't necessarily have to do this to play the airlines game.
No, absolutely not. And this is why I say I've given up. I've been a frequent flyer for 40 years. Written about frequent flying for almost as long. I now no longer worry about airline status. I fly the airline that works best for me. My loyalty is now toward the banks. Okay, what is American Express going to give me if I take card X or Y or Z? What will Chase give me if I take one or more of their cards? And that's where I pay attention to building up my loyalty, is spending on the proper cards, which eventually trickle down to the airlines, but I have more choice by saying I will do everything with American Express. American Express, for example, I hold the Platinum card, is the bank, the vehicle I use to get into the airline clubs. It's the vehicle I use to earn the points that I send over very often to Air France to fly to Europe. It is now the vehicle that even gives me free Walmart Plus, so I don't have to leave my vast worldwide headquarters when I want something, they deliver it to me. No airline's ever done that for me.
Right, right. So your point is that by not being shackled to the one card, you're able to kind of play the field, and that still works pretty well, at least from your point of view.
Again, everybody's a little different. Every person's experience is different. But I would venture to say the listener of this show would not be the kind of super frequent flyer that must be loyal to an airline. The only way I can see you need to be loyal to an airline these days, if you're in a market where they have total control of you. And there are some markets like that. Atlanta leaps right to mind. Chicago is an open city, however. Los Angeles is an open city. San Diego is largely open. You have choices in airlines, and it's nice to know you can have choice again if you pay more attention to the bank credit cards rather than the airlines themselves.
Before we wrap this up, Joe, I want to just quote something from the end of your article here at joesentme.com. Quote, as I've urged you for years, change your perspective. Ask not what airlines and hotel chains can do for you in exchange for your custom and loyalty. Never trust a toaster or the moral equivalent of the same. Ask instead what the bank credit cards will give you for your charge volume. It's the only way to win today. So I thank you for taking the time first to share this with those of us who are loyal Joe's blog. There is a charge for it. I only subscribe to two travel blogs. So that might tell you that I consider the information that Joe spits out not only to be relevant, but also to be entertaining in addition. So, Joe, thanks for writing the article and for taking the time with us today. Your explanations are something that I think an average traveler can understand, and I truly appreciate it.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Tom.
Thank you, Joe, especially for your time. I just can't tell you how much I enjoy reading Joe's blog. JoeSentMe.com is where you can find it. And, you know, I'm not here to sell you blogs on the radio, but for those of us who travel, it's good to have some good resources. Chris Elliott is a great resource. Joe is a great resource. And while he's very mild-mannered on the radio, he doesn't write quite as mild-mannered, if that's a proper way to say that. When you read some of his stuff, it's a little bit coming right at you. So you would enjoy it. JoeSentMe.com is where you can find his stuff.
All right. We are the Travel and Entertainment Guys. Our final segment coming up. Stick around. Good stuff. Just ahead to make you a smarter traveler. It's the Odds and Ends segment. Take off 20 seconds.
If you ever plan to motor west, travel my way, take the highway, that's the best.
My gosh, this sounds like your story, Mark. I mean, here he's taking a motor coach across it. How can you not identify with Nat King Cole? Are you Nat King Cole? And we really didn't know it.
No, that's it's funny that you bring that up. Travelers of color had a very different experience on Route 66 than Caucasian travelers did. And in fact, we stopped in a place in Springfield the other day, and a place called Route History, which talks specifically about some of the challenges that people of color faced when they traveled Route 66, because some of these towns were in Illinois were sundown towns. So if you were a person of color, you had to be out of town by sundown. You were not allowed to be on the streets. And so there were, and of course, remember, we had the Green Book folks on the air with us a number of years ago,
right?
Who talked about the importance of that travel guide for people of color. So fortunately, I guess I say fortunately, that we don't need something like that today, do we?
Yeah, I certainly hope not. I think it's somewhat ironic that Nat Cole. But anyway, we love the song and we love Nat. And back to the travel guys we go. History lesson.
Yep. We have a list here. This comes from Ned Levy, who has been on the show with us before, who writes for Travelers United. He made a list of essential things that you need to do, essential steps, he says, to take before you leave your home on vacation, create a departure list. And there he's got just about two dozen things here. Some of them are things that I have that you've seen and you'd say, oh, well, that's pretty obvious. But I thought it would be good to share some of these because a lot of folks are summer is coming and are about to take off perhaps on an automobile vacation. So maybe this will help you a little bit. First thing on the list, this is something that wouldn't have been on list 20 years ago, social media oversharing. Don't go posting travel itineraries or vacation itineraries before you leave, saying, I'm going to be out of town for the next 10 days. Also, think about when you post photos in real time while you're traveling, it tells the whole world that your home might be empty. You know, these can, even when your post is only to your family and friends, it's possible that it will be picked up in other places. And, you know, not all of your family and friends may be people that, you know, think very highly of you. So just really and truly, this is one of the best tips that I can offer folks is when you're out traveling is don't identify where you are. Wait and save those pictures until you get home. And then you can post them. And, hey, we just got back from a great trip, too, and we wanted to show you about it. And it's not quite real time, but it might save you some real misery. Certainly people would understand the wisdom of not advertising to the whole planet that you might not be at home in your house at some particular given moment in time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. No, great tip there.
Also, credit card companies. If you are, you generally don't need to warn them when you're going on a domestic trip in the United States or even in Canada. Some don't require even international travel notice. But if you're going to be away for several weeks and you're taking two credit cards with you, you probably want to notify those credit card companies that, you know, I'm going to the Czech Republic and Bolivia and Vietnam over the next couple months so that when those charges show up from those places, they won't shut down your credit card. So alert your credit card companies, especially if you're going to someplace that is rather exotic or you're going to go on an exotic vacation where you're moving around, like maybe on a cruise where you might be in three or four different countries in a week's period of time. Give your credit card company a chance. For your home, if you in your wallet, again, we talked about taking a couple of credit cards. Some people walk around with four or five of them. No reason to do that. Pick out the couple that you need while you're going to be traveling. Maybe pick out one emergency card. Put that card in a different place besides your purse or your wallet, someplace that if your wallet got taken or you lost it, that you would still have some form of backup way to pay for things on your vacation. You want to notify your home security system call center that you are going on a trip. You know, if you're only going to be gone a couple days, that's not a big deal. But if you're going to be gone 10 days, 2 weeks, then let the people who run your home security system, whether it's Sonatrol like it is in the case of our office, something like that, let them know that you're going to be gone. It goes without saying that you want to close and lock all your windows and doors, and you want to make sure that mail and newspapers, like people still get newspapers delivered to their homes. But some people get newspapers delivered to their mail on a regular basis. So that fills up a mailbox very quickly. So mail, make sure that that's put on hold. Newspapers are not likely to show up on your porch as much as, oh, that thing that you ordered from Amazon a week and a half ago and it wasn't available when you ordered it, and now they've sent it, and now you're not home.
Yep.
And so what that does is it telegraphs to people that you're not at home. It also, one other thing that can happen, besides them just stealing the thing from you. You know, we had some really unexpected heavy rain last week, and came home and saw that my neighbor had a couple of deliveries from somebody who had delivered packages door to door, UPS, Amazon, whomever, and they were sitting in the rain because the delivery person didn't expect it to rain. And so there you go. You might make it real clear. If you've got a couple of packages and you're gone and they sit out in the rain for a few days, not only are they going to be ruined if nobody steals them, again, you're advertising to people that you're not at home. So don't leave your keys under the doormat or a nearby rock. If you've got that because you have a high schooler or something like that, or somebody who needs to get into the house, but if you're going to be gone, don't leave them in the obvious hiding places.
Hey, Mark.
That makes pretty good sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Let me jump in. We were talking about packages and such delivered, and this speaks to you who travels and has gone from home for sometimes 10 days. Mail service. Okay.
Yep.
I always stop mail service, get a hold of the post office and have them stop mail service for a duration and then start it back up, go to the post office and pick up my mail. What about you?
I have my mail delivered to my business all the time. So therefore, because I'm traveling, I travel a lot. So it doesn't, you know, the folks in my office bring my mail in, so I don't have to worry about it ever accumulating at home. But yes, absolutely. If you're going to be gone for more than a few days, then you don't want mail piling up in your mailbox just for the reason that it might fill up. And now you've got to go and pick up your mail anyway. Also, most postal folks, if you tell them that you're going to be gone and you go to the post office, fill out the form and say, I'm going to be gone from the 21st to the 28th, in some cases, they will deliver your mail on the 29th to your mailbox.
So that's there you go. To, and you can do that them. Online.
Yep. Arrange for somebody to water your plants. You know, this is something that most people would think of, but again, you're gone for a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, middle of the summer. You want to see dead plants. Have your lawn cut. Again, these are things that you do, normal things that makes it look like that you are taking care of business as usual while you are gone on the road. Always leave your itinerary with somebody who, whether it's a neighbor or it's family or friends or whomever, hopefully you won't have an emergency situation. But if you do, you'll be glad that you left them with your itinerary information. I mean, heaven forbid that there could be a fire or there could be a storm or something like that, some kind of damage that you didn't expect. You want people to be able to, people that you trust to be able to get a hold of you. So it's really important that you leave some sort of emergency information. Bring in all your outdoor furniture, pool equipment, stuff like that. That makes pretty good sense. Put your lights on timers. Most people would think of things like that. Make sure your smoke alarm batteries are fresh. If you don't, you know, try out your smoke alarm once in a while to make sure that the batteries are still alive. Also, you don't want the batteries to run down in the smoke alarm while you're gone and the smoke alarm to start chirping, because what does that tell your neighbors? You're not home.
Mm-hmm.
So that's not good. Leave curtains and shades as normal. And consider a doorbell monitoring system at your home, because if you're frequently away, that is something that will come in very handy, because if somebody comes to your door, at least there will be some ID and identification. And really, the one thing that I just want to really emphasize from this list is stay away from social media while you're gone. Stay away from it. Don't post anything that will tell people that you're not at home while you're traveling.
The temptation is so great. I have friends, they travel a lot. I see their stuff, and I always question, are they traveling right now, or are they home and they've gotten back and they're posting it? Frankly, I don't know. But no, you're absolutely right. Back in the old days, Mark, when I was a DJ, one of the big concerns is if people knew where you lived, that while mm-hmm. you were on the air, they would go to your house uh-huh. and break in. It never happened to me. Happened to a close friend of mine who worked at K108. People might remember
okay.
that. And, you know, he also had a car with his license, with his name on the license plate. So they knew where his car was. This was back in the days when you didn't tape your show ahead of time. And so poor disc jockeys. And I suppose sports figures, as we've seen, are subject to, you know, people knowing where they are and what they're doing and taking advantage of breaking into their homes at that time. Great stuff. Well, it looks like a wrap for another Travel Guys radio program, Mark. I guess I'll see you next week here in town.
You will. The tour, the journey on down Route 66 will end in Oklahoma City, and it will be a pleasure to be back with you live next Saturday at 11 o'clock. In the meantime, dance like nobody's watching.
Thanks for joining us, my friends.
There is always-